I call the Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 10th, 2025. The time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phone. Members present, Senator Hughes, Senator Dunbar, Senator Klayman, Vice Chair Senator Wilikowski, Senator Myers, Senator Kawasaki, and myself, Senator Giesel. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather, who is taking the minutes, and Emma, who's managing the audio for us. So today we are having a continuation of a presentation that was begun on January 27th from Alaska Pipe Gas Line Development Corporation, President Frank Richards. And so I would invite Mr. Richards to the table. While he's coming, members do have a chart on their desk that was actually developed, I think, about 2014 or 15 by my office. And it mapped out a timeline for the gas pipeline originally. And so if you start down in August, you see where you start up in March. Pardon me. I start at the top. Duh. AGDC board appointments. But the right-of-way, you see property tax. That's a piece that has to be determined. Royalty determination. That's royalty in kind or royalty in value. Term sheets, parties agree, and then the board approves the agreements. There's a lot to do to put a gas pipeline in place. The other thing I brought with me today is the textbook, Industrial Mega Projects. We actually had a course on this. Senator Kawasaki probably remembers. Certainly Senator Wilikowski does. But this was like 4 days in Anchorage with the authors of this book. You might hear Senator Stedman refer to this book, the Green Book, that talks about how to tax these kinds of projects. And there is a chapter in here about taxing gas pipelines, natural gas. So that's kind of fun. And then just for laughs and giggles, I brought one of my binders that has many of the AKLNG PowerPoints in it. And then there's some cool history. I don't know if I can find them at the moment, but there's a whole series of, I have them on a little drive, a whole series about the various gas pipeline projects we've had in this state. Really well done kind of history research papers. So none of this is new. It's all been done before. And we still don't have a gas pipeline for a reason. In any case, Mr. Richards, welcome to the table today. That chart is what the Senate Finance Committee was asking you for this morning, a timeline graphed out. So I just thought I'd give you what we've had in the past. Senator Dunbar?
I'm sorry, I missed something, Madam Chair. Are you saying this is for this year? It's got the
no.
Senate majority. This is a previous year's
this
graphic.
Is about 2015 or so. It was about 2014-15 that we developed that timeline.
Interesting.
Yes.
Thank you.
So I don't know where we were, Mr. Richards, in terms of your presentation. So I'll let you figure that out and take us forward wherever you'd like to begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Frank Richards, the President of the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. And with the Chair's indulgence, I would ask my colleague, Mr. Matt Kissinger, to join me at the table to be able to help and address some of the questions.
That'd be great.
I believe that the presentation that we had discussed back in January, we had likely gone through some of the introductory slides. So what I would suggest possibly for today's update, if we could, I would like to advance to slide number 6.
All right. And if you could call out the slides you're on for the public listening at home. And when Mr. Kissinger takes over, if you would identify yourself each time as you change speakers. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So again, on slide number 6, we wanted to provide, as we did this morning with Senate Finance, kind of an evolution to where we are today with our developers. So, Matt?
For the record, Matt Kissinger, I do venture development for AGDC. We're on slide 7. As you rightly point out, Chair, the project has been out there for a long time, and a lot of people have this lengthy history with the project. Let's kind of break down that history a little bit, though, to understand what was being pursued at each time, why it didn't work, and what we're doing now. I think that'd be helpful. So the producer-led efforts, this is the first effort on the LNG project, following the Denali and Aegea projects. They were going to build pipelines to North America, obviously. Frack gas really changed the world around that, pivoted to LNG. But the producers were always a very poor source of capital for a project like this. There's a reason why the producers don't own midstream infrastructure for the most part. And they certainly don't own a lot of it in North America. Where they do own it, it's usually so that they can manage the political risk. So take like the BTC pipeline, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Turkey, or, you know, Papua New Guinea, where ExxonMobil's building LNG export capacity. But in the U.S. or North America, they become a very expensive source of capital because their investors aren't looking for those midstream, low-risk kinds of returns. They're looking for more risk and higher returns. So that was always a struggle with the producer-led effort. In 2016, Wood Mackenzie actually said as much. The producers had sanctioned this report from Wood Mackenzie. It came out and it said, restructure the capital. That was primarily what that report said. Said, go after project finance. And we began to do that, but we did it under a state-led effort for a number of years. And looking at what they were doing in the Gulf of Mexico, you could see some logic to it. The Gulf of Mexico, they were these nimble developers, Cheniere and Freeport, whatnot, and they would go out to the market. They would sell their LNG through these long-term sales and purchase agreements. That would provide them with the underpinning that then they could go and raise the financing to build the projects. But these projects didn't have a ton of project-on-project risk like ours does. Ours has this big carbon capture facility. It has the big pipeline, and it has the big LNG facility. And so we really needed to come up with another model that more appropriately kind of allocated the risks. And we call this the developer-led model, but it's also can be thought of as the alignment first. And this is where you bring in the more nimble developers. In this case, you'll be meeting Glenfarne, and Glenfarne are coming into the project in that capacity as a sort of quarterback. And then you buttress that with more depth. So you bring in your major North American pipeline companies, you bring in some of your other development companies to work with them, but having the nimble developer as your quarterback. And this is really how you drive down the cost of supply by doing project finance, by getting the lowest sources of capital on the equity. The loan guarantees on the debt side help tremendously by bringing the cost of the debt down. And this all brings your cost of supply stack, which was in the $11 range when Wood Mackenzie first did that report, down below the $7 range where we are now, and that's delivered into Asia.
Committee members present, any questions? Well, I have one. You've already presented to us that this is going to be the 42-inch
correct
pipeline. And what you're proposing and what that Wood Mackenzie study was for delivery to only Alaska, not an export facility, just a pipeline for Alaskans.
Chair, actually, I was referring to the earlier 2016 Wood Mackenzie study, which was where they suggested realigning the cost of capital. And so that was looking more at the export, not just the in-state supply.
Right. But now what you're looking at, I'm looking at 2023 onward.
Yep.
You're saying developer-led, so transition to world-class private parties, and what you're looking at is constructing a 42-inch line. That's what you're proposing to us right now.
That's correct.
That's what the Wood Mackenzie study was, saying that this would be economic. This would provide Alaskans with low-cost gas. It's a 42-inch line. Am I missing something? Is that not correct?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Richards?
Thank you. So you are correct. We are proposing a 42-inch pipeline as designed for the entire Alaska LNG project. So this concept that the evolution we're describing here is really about the full-scale Alaska LNG project. And then the phase one as a subset is really to utilize the design and the authorities granted to us by the federal government to move forward into construction. So it is the 42-inch line for delivery of energy to Alaskans, phase one.
So how can that possibly be a rational idea if you're only providing gas to the state of Alaska, which is a very small amount that's needed, but you're using a very large pipeline.
Madam Chair, again, it was our review of the needs for South Central Alaska was that there was the Cook Inlet is being challenged in terms of producing to meet our needs. And so we wanted to see what within the cadre of authorities and that had been granted to us for the Alaska LNG project we could use to be able to help to try and meet the needs of Alaska first. So when we looked at the pipeline project, again, yes, 42-inch for the population as well as the small volume of gas that is necessary is overkill. However, it is the first phase of a multi-phase project. And that the ability to phase the project was really key because during the authorization, it was always envisioned by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that this is an integrated project and various components of the project would be built in phases. So we talked to FERC about this opportunity to be able to utilize an aspect of the Alaska LNG project, which would be the pipeline. And knowing full well that it was oversized specifically for Alaska's needs, but we also looked at how could we meet the needs with another effort, such as the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project, which we were originally charged to do. We had started the development of that in 2013. We concluded that in 2015, and we put that aside when the legislature gave us the direction to go forward into the Alaska LNG project. To be able to resurrect the permits and authorization for a different size pipeline was going to add additional years and costs to the regulatory process. We'd have to open the environmental document back up, restate the purpose and need for Alaska initially. And so it was then going to push us out farther in terms of the development and the ability to deliver gas to Alaskans. So that was the first and foremost, trying to come up with a solution that we could utilize that was going to be economic and viable to beat the price of imported LNG and using that existing design of 42-inch.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I realize we're on slide one of 20. But to go off the chair's question, if these investors come in, developer-led, and they bring in capital from presumably world-class private parties, if they invest all this capital or whomever invests this capital, builds this 42-inch line, and then it never gets past phase one, that is, the additional facilities are never built for export and it's just in Alaska, what happens to those parties? That is to say, can they realistically recover the capital they put in if it never advances past phase one?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I'll take an initial stab and I'll ask my economics expert to add on. But the goal was to be able to develop a model to see whether or not the construction and the operations of that 42-inch mainline, based on the demand forecast that we could see for Alaska, would be economic, including the debt financing cost as well as the midstream private equity return that they would be looking for. And that's what was built in to AGDC's original model, and we presented that opportunity to the legislature last year about this time. And that's where the outcome was, let's have a third-party validation of that. And so that's what resulted in the Wood Mackenzie study. At the same time, we've been out engaging with private sector entities to be able to look at this project as well, knowing full well that gas to Alaskans is our primary target, and being able to deliver it as the quickest time is one of our goals, so that they are also looking at their own and developing their own economic models to validate what we have done, what WoodMac has presented, and now they can make that determination if it's viable for them and their investment criteria. So anything to add?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, it's exactly that. The phase one is standalone. It can stand on its own, and it can return the debt service required as well as the equity returns necessary for those equity investors and still deliver gas to Alaskans for less than imported LNG. And that's what we were looking for the phase one.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
Not at this time, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, gentlemen, for being here. There's a lot of curiosity on this subject, particularly, as you mentioned, what's happening in Cook Inlet. First, I wanted to find out whether there's any restraint, physical restraint or anything. We know with taps, when we hear that there's not enough oil in the pipe, it causes problems. It sounds like with phase one, if it's just enough gas flowing for Alaskans, is there going to be any problem, or do you have to have a certain volume to keep it operational?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, again, it was the hydraulic analysis. I'll get into the engineering terms. The design of the pipeline looked at what minimum flow would be necessary to be able to meet Alaska's needs, and then also to see whether or not that was going to be viable in terms of the pressure on the pipe. And it came out that, yes, it would. It's very similar, if you recall, to the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project, which was just a head compressor station in Prudhoe Bay, and then no additional compressor stations running throughout the state, and delivery of gas into South Central and into Fairbanks. So it's that same opportunity to be able to have a compression on the north slope and gas free flowing down that pipe.
Thank follow you. Up, Senator Hughes.
Thank you, and it's good.
Senator Hughes, pause for a moment. The speaker, for the record, was Mr. Richards.
Sorry,
go ahead, Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm glad to hear that even in phase one that it would work out financially. When I think about our Constitution and developing our resources to the maximum benefit for Alaskans, I do think about the revenue piece and the greater opportunities. And so my question, just looking what we're hearing in the news, we understand Japan's interested in our gas. We heard more recently in the last couple of days Taiwan is interested. Have those conversations played into any changes in the last few weeks since you've been hearing that news? And can we say that increases the chances that we would move to phase two?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, when we visited both Korea and Japan last fall, this concept of a phased project and building the pipeline first was very well received, because those entities, those parties that were looking to either invest or offtake the project, saw that from their perspective, the largest risk factor of the entire project would be developed and in place prior to the liquefaction, which is really what they're looking for, is they want the offtake from the liquefaction. So that was essentially an eye-opener in those conversations, and that has resulted in additional interest certainly coming our way. The news articles that have come out over the last week, both from Japan, both from Taiwan, and from Korea, have all been very positive, looking to come in and have to purchase offtake from the Alaska LNG project in total. So this is beyond just the phase one for Alaska. This is the entire project that will allow for Alaska gas for Alaskans, but also export for revenue to the Treasury.
Thank you.
Senator Klayman.
First, on the, I think it's called the All-Alaska Pipeline, what was the diameter of that if it wasn't 42 inches?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project?
Yes.
That was a 36-inch diameter pipeline. And at the time, GEO was in effect. We were limited to a flow of up to 500 million standard cubic feet a day, or approximately twice the amount that Alaska uses. And so we designed that original project based on a minimum flow of, or a maximum flow of 500 million standard cubic feet a day.
Follow up, Senator Klayman.
So going back to the current pipeline project, you're saying that the analyst, with no gas delivered anywhere but Alaska, we could basically run enough gas through the pipeline to pay for building this 42-inch pipeline?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, that's correct. To pay for not only the construction, but also the operation of that pipeline.
Follow up.
And I think the last follow up. And then to the extent we later wanted to build a plant to be able to liquefy that and put it on boats, that would be an additional cost of phase two, but not part of phase one.
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, that's correct. That's always been the ultimate goal, is the initial phase for Alaska and the second phase for the export project.
Senator Kawasaki, followed by Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. I keep hearing and I keep seeing in the slide deck talking about the Alaska LNG, and I just keep coming back to the proposal from 10 years ago. And at that point, the project partners were Exxon, BP, and ConocoPhillips in the state. And at that time, the project also had designed LNG as an offtake. And it said, I mean, it even has 42-inch pipe and as much as 15 to 20 LNG carriers per month. And that was for the underpinning at the time 10 years ago. So what's changed in the economics of the project that this is suddenly a doable project with just the pipeline?
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, one of the biggest changes...
Identifying yourself for the record,
Matt Kissinger for the record.
Thank you.
One of the biggest changes, or really the biggest change, is the alternative for supplying fuel to South Central Alaska. We were looking at, you know, Cook Inlet costs of $8 to $9 per MMBTU, and this was a kind of threshold that was trying to be met by both the ASAP and even when we were looking initially at trying to phase this. As we're now facing imported LNG, we know that that's really not the alternative. In fact, Cook Inlet contract prices are already showing up in the $13 range, and so we know that imported LNG is going to be more than that. It's really not difficult to do the math around it. That changes all the calculus on it. And so just with that information, we went back, looked at phase one, believed we needed an anchor tenant like Nutrien, but on further working with WoodMac, realized that even without an anchor tenant, you're still better off than importing LNG.
All up, Senator Kawasaki.
No, I think that's fine.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. As was referenced earlier, President Trump announced there was a joint venture in his press conference with the Prime Minister of Japan. And I'd like to get some details about what that joint venture includes, who are the parties to it, when will gas start flowing from that project, how much gas will be flowing from the project, what the fiscal terms are.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, again, leading up to that press conference as well as the outcome of that press conference, we have not had the opportunity to hear from the president's team on what was agreed to with the prime minister. We are engaged with Japanese companies at this time, but we do not have signed agreements yet.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
So you knew nothing about this proposed joint venture before President Trump announced it. Is that fair to say?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we knew from our own talks with companies from Japan for either offtake and investment that they were keenly interested. The outcome of the discussion between President Trump and Prime Minister Shiba, we didn't know the outcome, what that was going to be.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
You're the organization tasked with developing Alaska's gas, Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, right? You don't know anything about a joint venture with Japan, in other words?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, in terms of a joint venture, we have been in discussions with Japanese companies to partner with us.
Do you have a joint venture with any Japanese companies?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we do not have a joint venture with Japanese parties yet.
So this joint venture that the president talked about, you know nothing about?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, again, I...
Well, yes or no question.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, you're asking me if I know what the president was identifying as a joint venture with the Japanese. I do not know the specifics.
Do you know any details at all about this joint venture?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I don't know what was said in that private meeting.
Follow up, Senator
Have you
Wilkowski.
Been informed at all about the details of this joint venture?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I am scheduled to have a debriefing in a couple days.
Follow-up?
Who's your point of contact with the administration? Have you contacted the president's administration? Who are you dealing with to get this information?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we have two points of contact, really. One through our Senator Sullivan, through the National Security Council, and myself, I've been engaged with the Economic Council.
Follow-up?
It seems a little odd to me that the head of the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation does not know anything at all about the proposed joint venture that the President of the United States recently announced.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, again, when we are engaged with parties interested in investing in the project, we are bound by confidentiality rules. And we'll stick to those confidentiality rules. We do not currently have a joint venture.
Thank you.
Follow-up. None? Okay, then we go to Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess a similar question. My understanding is that one of the advantages of this project, AGDC, the LNG project, rather, is that the permitting is basically done, right, or a significant portion of it is done. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar. Frank Richards, yes.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
Who holds those permits? Is it the state of Alaska? Is it AGDC? Who has those permits?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, AGDC applied for and has those permits. We are the owner 100% of those authorizations.
So to get back to Senator Wilkowski's point, the president is claiming that there is now a joint venture with the Japanese for this pipeline project. They would have to use our permits, correct?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, to execute on the Alaska LNG project, they would need to utilize the existing authorizations, yes.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And if we, the Alaska legislature, decide that we don't want to enter into that joint venture, or we don't want you to use those permits, then that joint venture could not go forward. Is that correct?
Through the chair.
Using those permits.
Senator Dunbar, please help me understand the action that the legislature would take to prevent AGDC from entering into that joint venture.
Well, presumably you need some permission to go forward with building a line, correct? Or is the opinion sort of that permission's already in your possession and now you're just sort of informing us that you could go build this line with these permits?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, when the legislature gave us our enabling legislation, they empowered us with that authority to be able to make that decision to go into joint ventures, to divest ourselves of ownership, to acquire debt financing, to be able to acquire capital to move forward, and seek partners to move this project forward.
So the only thing we could do realistically would be to, like, because you were created by the state, we'd have to dissolve AGDC essentially. Through legislation.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar. That's plausible, yes.
Okay.
Reasonable.
Follow?
No, Madam Chair, thank you. But for the record, I have no suggestion that we actually do that. It's just curious. Thank you.
Other questions? I have one. So, obviously, building the pipeline, you have to have access to gas. I do know that AOGCC did authorize the offtake of gas from the North Slope, but you're not proposing the North Slope necessarily. You're proposing Pantheon, which is not one of the three major producers that were the original part of this project. It's not Prudhoe Bay or Point Thompson. So will AOGCC again have to come into play related to the offtake from Pantheon's potential gas?
Madam Chairman, I don't know the answer to that question. Matt?
Matt Kissinger for the record. Chair Giesel, I believe that would be the case. Yeah. And just for clarity, if I may,
yes,
the Great Bear Pantheon, while it is on the North Slope, of course, slightly south of Prudhoe Bay, that's a good opportunity for low-cost gas with low CO2. But as we've said before, this project is going to require financing. And financing means bankable gas. So we're always going to have the backup gas supplies from either Prudhoe Bay or Point Thompson or perhaps a Prudhoe Bay satellite. And we're in those discussions as well.
Thank you. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if the backup gas is required, it seems to me that it wouldn't mean much if it's gas that you can't yet put in the pipe. And if memory serves from meeting at the end of January, you said that in order to put the gas from, say, Prudhoe Bay into the pipe, that then you would have to build the little bit additional pipeline. You'd have to build the gas treatment plant. So why, if the backup gas is required, why weren't those costs factored into the Phase 1 study from Wood Mac?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, they were actually. They were included in the tornado chart of sensitivities on it. So the primary source of gas that we will intend to utilize is the Great Bear Pantheon gas, which will be less than a dollar. but there's also a sensitivity on using either the Prudhoe Bay gas, which would require some conditioning, or the Point Thompson gas, which would require a pipeline over to Point Thompson. Let's talk about the conditioning, though, because it's important to understand. We throw a lot of numbers around here. $44 billion is the total project cost. $10 billion of that is this Arctic carbon capture facility. $14 billion of that is the full pipeline with compression going under Cook Inlet. And about $20 billion of that is the LNG facility. You get to the 11 by removing the compression in the Cook Inlet crossing. That's where you get the 11. That takes gas down to like 50 parts per million CO2. That's very, very low. And you need that to liquefy methane. When methane turns into a liquid, CO2 turns into dry ice and clogs everything. So you have to get that out for technical reasons. For supplying in-state, you need more of a utility-grade gas. Utility-grade gas can vary between 2 and 4% CO2. Point Thompson happens to already be at 4%, so it's quite nearly there, or perhaps already is there. And taking Prudhoe Bay gas down from its current 13% to something closer to 3 or 4% is not nearly as costly, in fact, nowhere even close in magnitude, to that last mile of getting it down to 50 parts per million. So in what we're anticipating is around $500 million to get a pipeline out to Point Thompson, and we do not believe it would be more than that to condition 200 million standard cubic feet of gas from 13% down to 3 or 4%.
Okay. So that is an interesting question, bringing up Point Thompson gas. That's under some pretty high pressure. So no gas is being produced from Point Thompson right now. Is that not true?
Chair Giesel, there is some gas. Of course, the initial production system is designed for 200 million standard cubic feet of gas and 10,000 barrels of liquid per day. Mm-hmm. They're not operating at that right now. That's not a facility constraint. It's well deliverability issues. But they do still produce gas. They just happen to re-inject it at 10,000 PSI rather than putting it into the pipeline.
Be interesting to talk with Exxon about that. I thought there were some issues with their facilities there. But we'll pursue that another time. All right. Any other questions on this page? Oh, yes, Senator Wilikowski.
On Great Bear, do they have funding to develop their resource? And how many billion or trillion cubic feet of gas do they have at their disposal?
Through the chair, for the record, Frank Richards. Senator Wilikowski, they are seeking a capital raise right now to be able to advance, but they are in and have done, most recently completed their MEGRES well to do more delineation on the work. They are using that then to assist them in their resource profile, ultimately looking at what the overall resource will be available. We had, as I said last time, an independent analysis done by Ryder Scott to look at the work that Great Bear Pantheon has done. And I'll ask Matt to give an overview of what the outcome was.
Matt Kissinger for the record. Senator Wilikowski through the chair. That's correct. The Ryder Scott due diligence that we commissioned looked at the independent expert reports, looked at the subsurface information coming out of Great Bear Pantheon, and confirmed that there's far more than enough gas, producible gas, for in-state needs to the order of many, many times.
Well, volume.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
And when you say they're looking for to raise capital, what's their market cap, and what sort of interest rates would they be expected to pay? Are they seeking bonds, or what are they looking at?
Senator Wilikowski for the chair. I think these are questions are actually better for Great Bear Pantheon. We are keeping track of how they're moving towards an FID. We wish them luck in that, but as we've said, in case that project is not successful, we're ensuring that there's enough gas.
Follow-up?
And what's their market cap, Great Bear? Do you know? Are they publicly traded?
They are publicly traded. I don't remember their market cap right off the top of the head. I believe it's around $200 million, but we'll get that to you.
Thank you. Further questions? I think it would be interesting to have Pantheon come to the table. I'm interested in how they can sell the gas for a dollar. Do you have an answer to that, Mr. Kissinger? You look eager.
I have some insight into that, Chair Giesel. It's an unconventional oil development is what it is, right? And so they're going actually after the liquids. the gas doesn't provide much to them in reinjection like it did at Prudhoe Bay. For decades at Prudhoe Bay, we had to reinject the gas or we would have suffered extreme oil losses. That's not the same in these extremely tight, tight reservoirs. It's not a shale. It's still a sandstone. It's just extremely tight. So they're going after the oil, and the gas is almost like a byproduct in some ways. It's very similar to Point Thompson, to be honest, in that regard.
Gotcha. Thank you. All right. I'll let you proceed to the next slide.
Madam Chair, one answer for Senator Wilkowski was he asked, I think,
Mr.
about the volumes. Again, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I believe that the original volumes that Great Bear is looking at, their Poon and Kodiak, is in the 8 to 9 trillion cubic feet range. So significant find available for gas.
All right, I'll let you proceed, Mr. Richards.
Thank you. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. Matt Kissinger for the record. So as we've pursued this developer model, we went out and we scoured really the market of developers. We've spoken with all of the Gulf of Mexico developers, all the Australian developers, all the IOCs as developers. And our pitch is really we do have the best economics of any North American project, and really that's not debated by many people who look at the model. In fact, we've had this our economic model peer-reviewed by a number of parties that we feel quite confident in the results of. We have all the major permits, obviously. This is a game changer right now where we're able to move into construction quicker than a lot of other projects would otherwise be able to, and certainly no other West Coast project is even close or potentially ever will be. And we have the local support because this whole project is within one state. What we offer is, or what we're asking for is for someone to come in and develop this project and take it to FID. Carry the state or AGDC so that we're not paying and get this project through the front-end engineering design for all three sub-projects and to a final investment decision. And that's going to be the proof of the pudding.
Next time. Questions? Senator Wilkowski.
Just again, I'm just wondering if all this is not moot with the President's announcement that we have a joint venture with Japan. Just sort of wondering why this isn't all moot at this point.
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, Frank Richards, again, we were just trying to identify the work activities that we have done up to this point on what the offer has been to seek private investors to come into the project.
I had a question, Mr. Richards. Doesn't Japan have less expensive options than gas from Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, Japan is importing LNG from many different jurisdictions, whether it be Australia, be the Middle East, and including Russia. So one of their goals is to be able to look for alternative sources of gas, specifically Pacific Basin gas. So that's where Alaska factors in. What Japan has most recently done, though, in looking at their national energy demand and what they need going into the forecast, previously they came out and they've said, we want to be able to reduce our energy demand. We're going to look towards more renewables. We're going to look towards our net zero, meaning net carbon reduction goals by 2050. And ultimately, we want to be able to keep our economy floating, moving forward efficiently. What's happened most recently, though, is Japan, like many places in the world, are seeing now new commercial economic growth as related to data centers. Power needs for AI computing centers is increasing around the world. And so now they're looking to see where they can find additional energy resources. The press conference that Senator Wilkowski was referring to, the Prime Minister from Japan, Prime Minister Ishiba, essentially committed $1 trillion of investment in the United States to include LNG and energy offtake, but also other investment opportunities within the United States to be able to meet the goals of their country. They see, in our conversations with the Japanese, is that as a U.S. producer of energy, Alaska is the closest proximity to Asia. We have the long-standing relationship based on providing them with 50 years of supply coming from the Kenai LNG facility, that we are a neighbor that can easily provide a resource that they need going into the future.
Thank you. I'll let you go on to the next slide.
Yep. Matt Kissinger for the record. So through this effort, we have come to the place where we're entering into or we're negotiating definitive agreements with a company called Glenfarne. And I believe that you'll be meeting Glenfarne. I think they'll have representatives here over the next couple of days. So I won't go into too much detail on who they are. I'll let them introduce themselves, but explain sort of who they are and what attracted them to us. So they say in their mission, we want to realize the potential of world's energy transition. The way they're going about this is they're providing grid stability along with renewables. So if you look at what they've done in Colombia, for example, is a great example. They are importing LNG. They own that facility. They own the pipelines connected to that facility. They own the power plants connected to those pipelines. But they also own a lot of the renewable energy. And they can work between the two to provide the total grid stability. As you look at Asia, 80% of the world's coal is burned in Asia. And a lot of the countries in Asia get up to 50% of their total energy from coal. As you shift to renewables and you shut down coal, you still need the grid stability. And layer onto that this new phenomenon of the data centers, which is taking the energy world by storm in the way that fracking did in 2006, 2008. If you look at Japan's energy plan, for example, their power plan, they have been forecasting a decrease in total power demand for years and years and years. This year, they've turned that around, and they're forecasting an increase. That is due to the data center revolution and just the amount of energy it's taking. So while they're trying to reduce their reliance on coal and increase their reliance on renewables, they're also getting these major base load demand customers that they need to also feed. And so that's why the LNG demand is increased so much, and Glenfarne sees this as a great opportunity. That's one thing that attracted them to us. If we go to the next slide, which is slide 11.
For the people who are listening, this is Mr. Kissinger who's speaking.
This slide gives just an indication of where they are operating in the world. They are still building out their business quite a bit. They're growing at a very fast pace. But the two sort of key messages I'd leave you with is they have an established development team. They have over 800 employees. They actually operate all the facilities that they own. But they also have this incredible expertise in project finance and bringing the right capital to bear on the project. And that's really fundamental to making Alaska LNG work.
So that was on slide 11. Questions? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. So I don't know if I'm just ignorant, but I've not heard of Glenfarne before. And I know that we might have them before us, but who do they do business with? What other countries are they in? Can you just give us sort of a top-level discussion on where they are? Because I don't know them from Adam, and I don't know if everybody else does. But
through the chair, Senator Wilkowski.
Senator Kawasaki. Mr. Kissinger.
Matt Kissinger for the record. I would point out that about 3 years ago, you probably never heard of the company Venture Global as well. And in fact, we would go to conferences and not be able to find people from Venture Global. Venture Global IPO'd at over $60 billion quite recently, just on the back of their two developments in the Gulf of Mexico. So this is a rapidly changing landscape. Glenfarne themselves, where they're operating right now, primarily in Latin America, is where they have operating assets. That's where they have the import terminal in Colombia, pipelines, power plants in Panama, power plants in Chile. But they also have the Texas LNG project and the Magnolia LNG project. Admittedly, these projects are also in their development phase, but they're progressing those through as well. Texas LNG, they've been able to fully subscribe. They're the only LNG project that did fully subscribe in the last year. So they are rolling with success right now.
And follow-up.
Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki.
And do these Glenfarne investments, whether LNG or otherwise, take away from our current? I mean, we want to proceed with LNG. Do they conflict at all with that?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, these are guardrails that we are putting on the terms of our negotiations with them, certain milestones that they have to fulfill regardless of what they're doing in Texas or Louisiana.
Thank you.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Just on the question of funding, because they do have these other projects that they've acquired that have, they were stalled LNG projects that have yet to be advanced to closure. But what has AGDC on its own determined the Glenfarne funding sources?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, we have not identified what their future funding sources will be. What we have identified is their expertise in attracting the capital for their projects.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
And I get, how big is the market cap for Glenfarne?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, it's a private company, so the market cap is not published.
Okay.
Follow-up?
And I guess on that note, I know you had stated that a board meeting back in June last year that Goldman Sachs was screening possible investors to ensure they had access to capital and the necessary technical capability. And you also indicated that Goldman Sachs was not used to vet Glenfarne. And what show of proof do you have that gave you assurance of Glenfarne's capital and technical adequacy, and why Goldman Sachs was not used in the vetting process?
You start and I'll finish.
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, Matt Kissinger for the record. We did a full due diligence study on them, both their finances and their technical, and that's an ongoing effort, to be honest.
Mr. Richards?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, again, Goldman Sachs has been working with us for several years and has been out, as we have, looking for the opportunities to be able to help in moving this project forward through financial and strategic partners. So I wouldn't say that Goldman Sachs didn't vet them. Goldman Sachs met with Glenfarne. Goldman Sachs looked at Glenfarne and has been in consultations with us in their role of providing us with their assistance. They are still engaged with us. They're working, moving forward with us, and actively engaged in speaking to them as late as yesterday. So I'd say Goldman Sachs is still active participant.
Senator Wilikowski. So
has Goldman Sachs recommended Glenfarne to be the partner that we do this gas line with?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, Goldman Sachs did not recommend one way or the other.
Senator Wilkerson.
Are we paying Goldman Sachs to do this vetting for us?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the contract that we have with Goldman Sachs is that Goldman Sachs will be paid at capital raise. When a project is committed to and funds are raised, then that's when they get their fee. So they're working on their own behalf at their own expense.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkerson.
Was there an exclusivity agreement that was made with Glenfarne?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, yes.
And follow up.
And was the Alaska Attorney General is statutory legal counsel for AGDC. Did the Attorney General approve the Glenfarne exclusivity agreement?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, as you stated, the Attorney General is the counsel for AGDC and was actively engaged in all of our legal agreements.
Follow up.
Did he approve of it? Did he sign off on it? Or did somebody else sign off on it?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the Attorney General and the Attorney General's assistants were part of the discussion and actively gave us their counsel. But in terms of a sign-off of the exclusivity agreement, that was not part of they were not asked to provide for a sign-off.
Did the Attorney General draft the exclusivity agreement or review the exclusivity agreement prior to your signing?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, yes.
Okay.
Follow-up.
Was the Attorney General made aware that Glenfarne was not subject to the Goldman Sachs screening process?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, again, working through the Assistant Attorney General assigned to AGDC, they've been involved in all of the conversations, including those with Goldman Sachs.
Follow-up.
So the answer is the Attorney General was made aware that Glenfarne was not subject to the Goldman Sachs screening process.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, when you identify a Goldman Sachs screening process, again, we've talked in this the committee about what the screening process has been for AGDC, And we talked about where Goldman Sachs was in their efforts in trying to bring interested parties to AGDC for consideration. But there was not specifically let me back up a second. We talked previously in this committee about that we wanted to make sure that the entities that we were talking to had not only the development expertise and capabilities, but the financial expertise and capabilities, as well as the ability to raise capital. But more importantly, again, was to look at their operational expertise in the development of projects, as well as execution and ongoing operations. So that was one of the key factors in our looking at Glenfarm and what they do have, what they do operate, and how they're progressing forward and their achievements in developing operating projects that have been successful.
Is there a penalty if the state withdraws from this exclusivity agreement with Glenfarm?
Through the chair, Senator Wachowski, we are bound by a confidentiality agreement. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to get into the specifics of penalty clauses.
Well, the President of the United States told the entire world that he has a joint venture with Japan. And if I'm wondering if the state is potentially going to be on the hook for damages to Glenfarm for breaking that exclusivity agreement. The president decides not to use Glenfarm.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, again, partners coming in to work with Glenfarm would be welcome. So a joint venture, whether it be through Japanese, through Koreans, through Americans, with Glenfarm, will be a positive moving this project forward. As we described, in looking at Glenfarm, they want to come into the project. We want them to come into the project in this leadership role, acting as a quarterback. So they will bring in other partners that will help to augment their capabilities to be able to move this forward most expeditiously, but also with the right technical and operational oversight to be able to make sure that we are moving forward and we're not going to put ourselves or themselves in a predicament of having a failed project.
Follow up.
The AGDC entered into an exclusivity agreement with Glenfarm, meaning that we can only that they're the exclusive developer, I presume. Can you state for the record whether the AGDC board approved of AGDC entering into the exclusivity agreement with Glenfarm, and if so, what was the means of the approval?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the board did not give us. We did not ask for a board action to sign the exclusivity agreement. The board will be, as we described, we're currently drafting definitive agreements right now. And that's where those actions, those developments, the terms of those will be brought forward to the board for the board approval. That was, in terms of the statutes provided to us, it was the board responsibility to be able to make those decisions on the definitive agreements.
It seems to me entering into an exclusivity agreement is a major, major decision that is made, and that is something for which the board would have had a say before you actually entered into that agreement. And I'm just curious why you didn't have the board approve that.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, again, we do have ongoing board discussions and information that we share with them. We certainly talk to them about the exclusivity option that we were discussing with Glenfarm. But we did not seek and the board didn't ask to provide for an approval of that exclusivity. They want to be informed so that they know what their responsibilities are, and they are asked specifically that we keep them apprised now that we have definitive agreements to be able to present those to the board for so that they are brought along as we go through the negotiation and they have the full knowledge to be able to make the decision at the time when those definitive agreements are complete.
Well, just one last one.
Yes, follow up.
If the state, so I understand you're seeking some money, $50 million, I think, from the legislature?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I believe that in the governor's budget, there was a fast track supplemental for $50 million. But it's my understanding that with amendments coming out next week, that fast track supplemental will be withdrawn.
Follow up.
So you'd no longer need any funding for to fund Glenfarne, or are you getting the funding from ADA or somewhere else?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, again, speaking about the phase one project and taking that project into front-end engineering and design, that's the effort that we are working now with ADA on a definitive finance agreement with ADA, should ADA ultimately elect to provide for a backstop for the phase one feed. But at the same time, we are working now on these definitive agreements with Glenfarne with a commitment to fund the entire $150 million for the Alaska LNG project in total. So this is a key point. I think that we may have confused folks last time, is that the phase one project, the estimated total maximum cost for FEED was going to be up to $50 million. And that's where we talked to the legislature last year, and they gave us the directive to go validate that with Wood Mackenzie. We then had a discussion with ADA about the opportunity to potentially use ADA funds to be able to provide that $50 million backstop. That's the application process that we went through with ADA, and ADA board then directed the executive director to work with us. And those are the terms now that we are exchanging with them. But again, that's the one subset of the project, the phase one for Alaska only. The entire Alaska LNG project, which is the three main components, the gas treatment, the pipeline in total, including compressor stations, and the liquefaction facility, in order to take that to final investment decision, that cost we estimated to be $150 million. So the pipeline is a subset of that $150 million. So our negotiations with Glenfarne is the commitment to fund the full front-end engineering and design to a final investment decision.
Follow-up.
Are you going to continue to seek this funding from ADA and just keep moving along with this project with Glenfarne? Or are you going to pause and wait to see and learn more about the joint venture that President Trump recently announced? It seems to me like you'd wait. It seems to me like you wouldn't just keep plugging ahead on this project if the president has a totally different vision for what it should be. Or agreement. Sounds like he said joint venture. Those are his exact words.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we are proceeding forward on not only the definitive finance agreement with ADA, but we're also on our definitive agreements with Glenfarne.
So you're going to spend potentially $150 million, and the President of the United States could announce something completely different or has a completely different agreement, and that would be wasted state money, potentially.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, this is going to be money that Glenfarne is committing to spend, not state of Alaska money.
And there's no backstop by the state?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the backstop, as you suggest, we may not ever reach the point of executing a backstop agreement with ADA. Then it would be the full funding commitment by Glenfarne to move the project forward.
So I have a question about Glenfarne. I know we've asked questions about them before, but according to their website, this is Glenfarne's website, they've never completed a project. They've simply bought projects that are already completed and then operated them. Can you name some that they took on at the stage that this project is and then brought them to completion?
Go ahead.
Chair Giesel.
Kissinger.
Matt Kissinger for the record. Chair Giesel, no, I can't name projects that they've taken all the way through to development.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Richards.
Yes, Madam Chairman, I would say there is also information on the materials that they've provided to us, but also on their website about their South American power production projects, where they have executed, designed, constructed, and executed and operate existing power facilities in South America.
Thank you. So they're they've built power plants, but this is quite different than that. In addition, you've named South America and South U.S., not North Slope of Alaska or the top of Norway or other Arctic environments. So Do you have no concerns that this environment will be quite different than running a power plant in South America?
Madam Chair, yes, we do. We want to make sure that, again, Glenfarm in a quarterback role will bring on those partners that do have expertise, that do have the capabilities to be able to execute a mega project in the Arctic and subarctic, in the marine environments that we have in Cook Inlet. The development of modules that will be built in whether it be the U.S. Gulf Coast or Asia and then brought to the North Slope for ultimately fabrication and operation.
Mm. Okay. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if this is appropriate, but I have a question about slide 18, which we're not anywhere close to, but I think we've sort of touched almost everything on the other slides. But slide 18, I think, is very interesting because it shows construction starting in 2027. And, you know, a number of us just got reelected to four-year terms, so I'll be here, you know, barring some kind of catastrophe. So I guess I'm curious about how confident you are in this timeline. 2025 FEED, 2026 financing, 2027 construction. How confident are you in this timeline? What, if anything, could cause this timeline to not come to pass?
Through the chair, or Madam Chair, may I proceed to slide 18?
Yes.
Okay. Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, again, we wanted to represent, again, at the start of calendar year 2025, if we were able to execute FEED or start front-end engineering and design, we know that that will likely take 12, possibly 14 months to be able to complete and update the cost estimates, to look at the execution plans, to look at the pipe mill slots available for pipe to be manufactured in U.S. mills. And then at the same time, looking at the financing components of the project that would ultimately require both debt financing and equity financing. So we feel that that likely can take about 2 years' time frame. So we, in consultation with engineering, procurement, and construction contractors, we feel that the FEED level of effort that we have within AGDC's library of pipeline work is truly at a very high standard, almost at the FEED level standard. Because remember, we did complete front-end engineering design for the 36-inch pipeline, the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project, that runs down the very same right-of-way, the very same center line as the Alaska LNG project. So we feel we've got great geotechnical work. We've looked at the hydraulic analysis on it. Now it's going to be a review and update of the cost estimate. So we feel good that the FEED timeline can be completed, and that was our goal, to be able to execute the FEED as quickly as we can with a funding source to be able to do that.
Okay, brief follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
So if I understand what you – one of your responses to Senator Wilikowski is that you're no longer asking sort of the legislature to provide $50 million of backstop, that you've worked this out with ADA. So you've worked this out with ADA for that $50 million to complete – FEED. You've got $150 million potentially coming in from Glenfarne, and you're sort of informing us this is going to happen. You're not asking for anything for us. So there's nothing we need or can do to change this timeline. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, one correction I would say, we have not completed our agreement with ADA. So that's why we have not executed or started FEED. But our goal is, and really this goes back to the goal of why are we pushing for phase one as opposed to the Alaska LNG project? It was to be able to provide gas to Alaskans at the earliest possible date. If now we have a great offtake opportunities for the LNG project coming in from other countries, and we have impetus coming in with additional investment or partnership or joint ventures, then that is, again, very positive for us to be able to move forward. And the pipeline may then already have a course set in terms of the front-end engineering and design as part of the entire project. But this concept of phase one was really about the ability to deliver gas to Alaskans at the earliest possible time. That's what this represents and what we feel is achievable should we have the money to be able to start the front-end engineering and design.
Which you don't need from us.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. So you're seeking $50 million from ADA instead of from Alaska.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we applied to ADA for $50 million, up to a $50 million backstop.
Okay. And I would suggest that they don't have the legal authority to give you that money. That is an appropriation from the state treasury for which they need legislative approval. And I'm just wondering why you withdrew your request for funding from the legislature and seek to get it from ADA instead of getting it appropriated as since we are the appropriators from the legislature.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, again, the amendments that I'm told about that will come to the legislature next week will come from the Office of Management and Budget and the governor's office. I was informed of this. It's not my appropriation. I'm not the appropriator. You guys are the appropriators. We went into last year's the end of last year's session with the intent language that was given to us by the legislature, specifically on phase one. And this is looking at the ability to use a pipeline to deliver gas to Alaskans. And that was prove whether or not a phase one can be economically built and provide gas or energy to Alaskans at a rate equal to or less than the cost of imported LNG. And if that is the case, and if there is a positive economic value to the state of Alaska, which Wood Mackenzie presented, then we will all work together to be able to execute and move forward on the pipeline. But we go back to schedule, and the schedule was how do we get gas, knowing full well that there's going to be supply shortages here at the end of the decade that we are trying to address. And that was what the whole concept of phase one was the ability to bring gas from the North Slope to meet Alaska's needs first, while at the same time moving forward with the development of the Alaska LNG project.
Follow up?
Well, yeah, we gave you the authority. We've given you the authority for years, maybe decades even. But that doesn't give you the right to go behind us and try to get funding from a state corporation without going through the legislature. It's got to go through the appropriation process. And I'm extra concerned because you've got some kind of agreement with Glenfarne for which you can't tell us what the penalties are. We don't know what the terms are. We've got the president announcing there's a joint venture with another nation already. So I would just urge that since the president has another deal, maybe we need to slow this down a little bit.
Senator Kosaki.
Thanks. Thank you. I think this is for Mr. Richards because you mentioned the Wood Mackenzie report. Some of those assumptions and estimates that have been made in this presentation we have here, there's a statement made by Wood Mackenzie specifically that we do not guarantee their fairness, completeness, or accuracy. And I'm kind of curious because they do talk about the entire LNG project, and I keep getting confused about whether we're talking about just the pipeline or the gas treatment and LNG. And then I've got a follow-up for there.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, and I apologize if we are confusing the aspects of the project. That's not our intent. Our intent is to be able to be clear and identify what the differences are between a phase of the project, meaning in this case the pipeline phase of the project, as opposed to the entire project. And Wood Mackenzie, again, is a international natural resource consultancy. I'm not sure what the specific language that they put in there for their own sake, but it sounds like they were providing themselves some cover, and I'm not sure why.
No, I'll move on to another question, though, because we're looking at this feed. I know we've skipped a bunch of slides forward, but talking about the $50 million in feed, is it just pipeline? Is it just the phase one pipeline? Or is it the entire project that AGDC and the Alaska LNG project are attached to when it comes to Glenfarne and the exclusive contract?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the $50 million backstop, my apologies, Senator Kawasaki. The $50 million backstop is really just for that pipeline phase of the project, that initial phase one to deliver gas to Alaskans.
And then follow up,
Follow up, Senator Kosek.
I am reading, so on Glenn Farn, a statement made by the Energy Transition, Glenn Farn Energy Transition says, Glenn Farn confirms it has entered into an exclusive agreement with the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation for development of the Alaska LNG project, including the Alaska Export Facility Pipeline and a carbon capture facility. So is that, is it the entire thing or is it just part of it?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. Glenn Farn has entered into an agreement for the entire Alaska LNG project.
Okay.
Follow up?
No, that's great. Thanks.
Okay. I'm going to interject a question here, again, pertaining to Glenn Farn. Would they not do this, would they not take this on without a $50 million backstop?
Through the chair, Madam Chair. The $50 million backstop is, again, allowing us to advance the execution of the front-end engineering and design. That was really the entire intent of it. Glenn Farn was aware that we were looking towards providing a $50 million backstop, but it was not a deciding factor. Their commitment to us is for the full funding of the front-end engineering and design for the entire project.
So the reason I ask that question is that in March of 2024, at CERAWeek, it was stated that Glenn Farn Group management team has $20 billion of transactional experience. The project we're talking about is a $44 billion project. They have half that amount in transactional experience. And so, again, I'm questioning if we employed Goldman Sachs to do this search and they didn't find Glenn Farn or interviewed them and didn't select them or then, again, I'm questioning their capacity to actually take a project to completion, based on the fact they have not done that previously.
Madam Chair, again, I think what you're referring to is Glenn Farm's ability and what they've financed as an entity called Glenn Farn. So that's, and they created this company, I believe, in 2014, maybe 2013, so it's about been around about 11 years. So that's $20 billion over 11 years is a very large amount. The founder, though, previously came from Macquarie, and Macquarie Infrastructure in particular. So they created that business within the United States, and they looked at public-private partnerships across the United States and invested literally tens of billions of dollars in private developments across the country, energy, transportation, you name it. So they have, as an entity, they have not only what they've done within their own company, but their prior experience in working with their former companies.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the Wood Mackenzie study and what we've talked about, phase one, is that essentially it pencils just with the Alaskan market, correct?
Matt Kissinger, for the record, through the chair. That's correct, Senator Dunbar.
So, Mr. Kissinger, we recently had an announcement with Harvest, Hillcorp, and Chugach that they were going to work together to do LNG import, presumably with at least some long-term contracts so that they could, you know, it has to make financial sense, right? At the same time, we have a proposal with Glenn Farn, actually, ironically, and NSTAR, also working on LNG import. So my question is, did the Wood Mackenzie study take into account the utilities potentially entering into long or at least medium-term contracts with those LNG import facilities, particularly Chugach, considering they're partnering with Harvest? And if that happens, how long can this project go without major utilities, you know, purchasing gas from it because they are bound by those kind of contracts?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, that would act in much the same way as existing Cook Inlet firm contracts act. And so it definitely would take some of the demand off of the pipeline during the early years were Chugach to be getting a long-term supply. Now, that is an assumption. It's quite possible that the deal that they're entering into would allow them to dovetail into pipeline gas. I don't know. We're not privy to that deal that they're discussing with Harvest. But you would treat it much like an extra contract out of Cook Inlet. So we're going to sculpt the tolls during the first years of the pipeline. That's fairly standard as you bring fields on and you ramp them up for new pipelines. You sculpt the tolls during the initial year so they're not exorbitant, and that adds a little bit in the later years. That has been accounted for in the Wood Mackenzie study. We'd have to go back and relook at what the exact impact would be on some assumption of an extension of a Chugach contract. My sense is it wouldn't be great. It wouldn't be a great impact because they're not the biggest buyer of gas.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Klayman.
I want to go back to the inquiry that Senator Giesel, the chair, was having about the prior experience of Glenfarne. And I'm not sure actually who's better to answer the question, so you can decide. But it seems to me from what you described about Glenfarne's experience, this $20 million in investment, it wasn't one project that was a $20 million investment, but instead, or $20 billion, instead it was a number of different projects that maybe they put in a billion here, a couple of billion there. But they sound more like a private equity investor that's sort of picking other existing projects that are ongoing and thinking they're good investments, so they invest in those and they are generally turning out okay and profitable, but none of those seem like they're the ones in charge of the project and planning the project and sort of leading the path. Am I missing something on their prior experience? Because the description I heard from you didn't sound like a group that had actually worked to plan a pipeline of the magnitude that we're talking about here.
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, you're absolutely right. Glenfarne has not themselves planned a pipeline of this length or this complexity in the Arctic. However, they are and have partners that they have worked for that have capabilities to be able to do that. And they would be bringing in those partners into the project to be able to execute it.
Follow up, Senator Klayman.
But we don't even know who these partners are. We're essentially, you've got a project long distance in the Arctic, more money, and we're essentially being said these are the folks that know how to do this plan, even though they've actually never done the plan before, and we're relying on partners they've worked with. We don't even know who they are. Am I missing something, or I've got all those details right?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, right, you're correct. Those partners have not been named yet.
Thank you.
All right, I'll let you proceed.
Madam Chair, should I go back then to...
Actually, I would suggest not. I think that the committee will be interested in probably your financial slides.
Would that be, Madam Chair, slide 19?
Probably so. Let me see. Sure. Go ahead with 19 and 20.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What we wanted to represent here was that we've been using this term final investment decision, or FID, and that is a milestone for any major project to be able to take because they have found and they've gone through as a developer or even as a state entity that you've looked at all the aspects of the project to be able to identify, yes, it meets your metrics for investing or moving the project forward. So the front-end engineering and design that we've been talking about will produce several things. Number one, it will produce EPC, or engineering, procurement, and construction contracts to construct the pipeline. They will update the cost estimate that we have, what it will take to ultimately construct the pipeline. That's referred to as a Class 3 cost estimate. That's the standard level of engineering detail that companies look for to be able to then make a final investment decision. In addition, it is having the permits in place. In some instances, the companies move forward without having all the permits in place. But for us, we have gone out and we've acquired all those major federal permits and we have them ready to go. So that major risk factor has been accounted for and is not in place. So hopefully that would lead to a positive. But at the same time, they're going to be looking at where does the financing come from? The equity financing, the debt financing, what's going to be the cost of that? What's going to be the benefit, you know, in our particular case, of the federal loan guarantees? and how that will help potentially reduce the debt financing costs on the project. They're going to look at operating and management agreements in place to ultimately go from construction to actual operations. At the same time, we're going to need to be able to have and make assure that we have gas supply agreements in place. So that's with the North Slope gas purchases agreements. And then on the downstream end, gas offtake agreements to Alaska utilities and industrial users. And in particular, as a consideration, is whether or not there's credit support. So these are all the factors that make a decision that a private investor is going to go through and want to have at their ready to make a final investment decision.
Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, this is an easy question. On the feed, when you're talking about whether whether after at feed, is Fairbanks included in that and the offtake point that's 40 miles away?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, again, I'll refer back to your original description of the joint venture project that was led by ExxonMobil. And at that time, they were limiting the offtake to 3 points. One was Fairbanks and two in Cook Inlet area. The Alaska LNG project that they pushed forward did not include the lateral to Fairbanks. So it is not included, was not part of the authorization sought through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. But the interconnection point at Chattanooga is in place and will be part of the updated design. What we have as AGDC is a front-end engineering design that we completed as part of the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project for that 32 miles leading from Chattanooga into Fairbanks. So that work has been done. What we are going to do, though, is update that work, update cost estimate, so we move from $2015 to $2025, to be able to then know ultimately what that lateral is going to cost.
Okay.
Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki?
Just a statement that we do have utilities, the Golden Valley, of course, and some pretty large industrial users like the military up there. So, I mean, gas would be a great benefit. So, thanks.
And as I recall, the Wood Mac estimate did not include that pipeline. So, interesting.
That's correct. Madam Chair, if I may, for Senator Kawasaki, Frank Richards, when the legislature created us and gave us our initial charter, it was to look at delivery of North Slope gas to both South Central and to Fairbanks. And so that's why Fairbanks is key. We looked at what the Fairbanks needs would be, not only for the at the time the existing utilities, but the future growth in Fairbanks, including the military. So as the military has looked at its own power generation needs and has the last remaining coal-fired plant in the U.S. arsenal, the goal is to be able to provide for cleaner burning energy, and that's where the gas off of this project would be able to feed into Fairbanks and provide then a major new energy source for the military to have additional power.
So, Mr. Richards, did you ask Wood Mac to include that in their study that they did for you? And they failed to do that?
No, Madam Chair. We asked them to look at the pipeline specifically from the North Slope to South Central. With that includes the interconnection or the offtake point for Fairbanks.
But not the pipeline to Fairbanks.
That's correct.
Thank you. Further questions at this point? All right. Next slide.
So when we talk about gas supply for the Phase 1 project, we've talked about what Great Bear Pantheon has offered to us. And again, they are a developer. They are not an existing in operations. But the gas sale precedent agreement that we entered into earlier this year was for a price that had a maximum of up to $1 per million BTU. So this was a very low-cost option to be able to provide gas into the pipeline for Alaska's needs. The benefit of this gas coming off of Great Bear Pantheon is it doesn't require that expensive treatment. Its current carbon dioxide levels are less than 1%, so it means it'll meet the needs of existing power generation and home heating and utility specifications. The location where Great Bear is producing their gas is directly adjacent to the Dalton Highway, directly adjacent to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and directly adjacent to the pipeline corridor for the Alaska LNG project. So there are a lot of positives around it. But as Matt described earlier, we want to make sure that we have a backup specifically going into finances. So that is the discussions that we've been having with the producers, not only in Prudhoe Bay, but Point Thompson and the satellite fields, each of which comes with potentially additional expense, whether it be a lateral leading from Point Thompson into Prudhoe Bay or some gas treatment to remove the CO2 in Prudhoe Bay, or the satellite fields, which would also require some additional pipelines but also gas treatment. So those are ongoing conversations with the producers, ultimately would lead to a gas supply agreement.
Thank you. We'll move on to slide 22 and 23.
All right, Madam Chair, we wanted to be able to talk specifically about the transition that we have engaged with and moving forward with in a definitive agreements. So we're in this time frame that we describe as pre-definitive agreements right now, where AGDC is the owner and the lead developer of the Alaska LNG project. But we are working to bring in that lead party at the pre-FID, pre-front-end engineering or pre-final investment decision to take on the leadership of the project to be able to move it forward through the front-end engineering and design, but also through the financing and all those things that I talked about that would be necessary for final investment decision. So at this point, AGDC with Glen Farm, the state equity within 8-Star Alaska would be at the 25% ownership. So we'd go from majority or 100% owner down to a 25% or minority owner, and that require that Glen Farm carry us at their cost. That means that they cover the cost to execute the front-end engineering design to take us to a final investment decision. And then leading to the final investment decision will really be a point where we come back to the legislature, because we've reserved the right in the sub-project limited liability corporations for the state to invest up to 25% should it elect to. So this will be a conversation coming back to the state to identify what are the estimated cost estimates for each of these projects, what are the contributions that would be required for the state to meet to be able to become an equity or a debt financing investor. And we've made sure that we hold those rights for the state of Alaska, but not as an obligation. That is the decision of the legislature to make. So we want to be able to present an option going forward, so at final investment decision, if Alaska wants to be an equity owner with all the rights and all the risks associated with it, they'll have made that decision, or not. And at such point, we'll have retained the 25% ownership rights at the project level of the 8-Star structure.
Questions from committee members? Senator Kawasaki.
Thanks. Just a couple of years ago, the presentation and a lot was discussed about Exxon and BP being producers who represent these Prudhoe Bay, Point Thompson, North Slope satellite fields like Endicott and North Star, that they would be a big partner. Is that still sort of the idea or still sort of the case? Because we haven't really heard much from them about this project.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, the producers, Exxon, Hillcorp, and ConocoPhillips, have said they would like to sell their gas into the project. Now, previously, they were equity participants in the project when it was under the joint venture agreement with Exxon, BP, and Conoco at the time. And now they have clearly identified that they're working with us on gas sale precedent agreements to sell into the project.
Seeing no further questions, we'll go on to slide 23.
23, Madam Chair, this is really just a representation of what is known as a RACI chart, or responsible, accountable, consultable, and informed. What are the rights of each party in these respective agreements and the time frame? So we're in this pre-definitive agreement time frame. AGDC is accountable for the Alaska LNG project. We're consulting as we work through the definitive agreements with Glen Farm. And then at the signing of the definitive agreements, then the responsibility or accountability switches to Glen Farm as the lead developer. And then we have the responsibility for assisting with the technical and commercial aspects of it, but we have the accountability for the overseeing the state's interest, that 25% carried interest that we will retain as we move forward towards final investment decision.
Yes, Senator Dunbar, question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So can, just so I'm understanding here, can construction happen in pre-FID?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, again, this pre-FID is when we're in front-end engineering and design.
Right.
So we have the permits in place, but we haven't reached an updated cost estimate to take a final investment decision.
So on this sheet, it says 2028 is when we go enter the post-FID, the final investment decision has been made. But on slide 17, you have construction starting in 2027. Am I missing something?
I think what we, through the chair, Senator Dunbar, again, this slide unfortunately shows fiscal year as opposed to calendar years. So we've got a little bit of a six-month lag there. But the goal was to be able to take a final investment decision towards the end of 2026 or beginning of calendar year 2027.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions on this slide? All right. We've reached 5 o'clock. The remaining slides are simply talking about polling and support for the project. So I will let committee members read that themselves. That will conclude our hearing. I will point out that earlier today in the Finance Committee, it was pointed out that the state of Alaska has invested $635 million so far in this project, and add to that the $500 million that we had previously put into the TransCanada project. So over $1 billion invested in some kind of gas pipeline so far. So that will conclude our presentation for today. Thank you, Mr. Richards and Mr. Kissinger, for presenting all this information and coming back to do that. Thank you. The next meeting will be Wednesday, February 12, 2025, and that will be at 3:30 p.m. On the agenda is Executive Order 136, establishing the Department of Agriculture. We'll be hearing from invited testimony. At this time, the meeting will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect. The time is 5:01 p.m.